The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
You're listening to
Wrestling to the Max.
Alert, alert, clear all channels.
This is an exclusive.
How you like that?
Gary Vaughn, Sean Garmer, and Paul Leeser.
King of Sport. New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Hello and welcome to the Wrestling to the Max New Japan G1 Climax 27 Nights 2 and 3 review. And I'm here with Mr. Paul Leeser.
Heyo!
Of course, I am your host, Mr. Sean Garmin. Here we go with, that was one heck of a night one, Paul. And now we start off with the first show for the B block here. Did you watch any of the tags? I did not.
I did. I have managed to trooper through and stay awake and actually watch the beginning of the shows and fall asleep sometime during the block matches and then wake up the next morning and finish the shows. So the really, really fun tags, though. The opening one with Kawato and Ibushi is just incredible. I really recommend that. But everything else on here is good.
Well, that's good. So good that they're having good matches for those that do watch live like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So we started off here as I just watched these, but I also kind of tended to, like, they all become a blur after a while. So Toshi Kojima and Satoshi Kojima and Juice Robinson was the opener and was perhaps the best match on the entire night two. So they started off very strongly here. And we talked about Juice Robinson bringing that fire. He did that. Kojima, of course, always wanting to look strong. I do appreciate him using the Tenzan Mongolian chops there to remind us that, his buddy no longer doing the G1, but he's there in spirit. And, man, they just had one heck of a match. You know, Juice was, he had to deal with almost losing to a Koji Cutter. They went outside a few times, too, which, you know, it's going to happen in these things. You know, Kojima got out of the Pulp Friction first and hit him with the lariat, but the other arm. And then hit the Brainbuster, and then we hit him with the, it looks like he was going to hit him with the correct arm, but Juice kicked out again, and then he hit the Pulp Friction and won.
Yeah, this was a really, really fun match. For one, this is two of the most energetic workers that New Japan has, I think. Not only just because the crowd is so into them, but what they bring to matches is always just so much fun. And I think you get that really heavily on display here. And Juice, they really let Kojima, I think, control it. And Juice sort of starts getting his moments, and then Kojima just sort of throws him back down again and just keeps on coming until Juice finally manages to overcome with that big left and puts him away the Pulp Friction. And I love it. This is maybe one of Juice Robinson's best matches in New Japan so far. And I love wrestling Twitter sometimes, and especially watching these live. Like, a lot of the New Japan fans continually freak out about how great a pal Satoshi Kojima is to just Tenzan and wish that he was their best friend. And
yeah.
It's one of the most funniest things you'll read, especially when it's 5:30 in the morning and you're pretty sure that you're getting a little bit delirious.
All right. I mean, between that and letting you know that he eats bread all the time.
Yes, bread club for life.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, forget having – they need to come out with the Bread Club shirts. Forget Bullet Club. We need to have Bread Club.
I think I've seen people make Bread Club t-shirts, but I don't think I've seen a place to buy them.
I wonder if Kojima ever came to the – you know, do the U.S. tour, if you'd get Bread Club chants going on.
There were a lot of people in that classic Japanese group wishing he would have been there because there are so many people in that group who love Bread Club so much.
That would be I think he'd totally be overwhelmed at the fact that people really pay attention to that. I mean, he reminds you every day, so obviously he knows it's caught on with his actually rather pretty good English, and it doesn't seem like it's, you know, Google Translate or anything, so... hats off to him there. You know, Juice, what more can you say about the guy? I think if you're looking for a most improved, he already has that ticket unless somehow somebody usurps him in this next half year that we have. Just the dude just has gotten from coming into and learning starting from the bottom, and then now he's a guy that you're looking at and going, man, I can count on him delivering every match, and he does that again here. These two just worked really well together, and you know, Kojima always kind of brings it in the G1, so you know, fantastic stuff here. Great match to start off things. Sadly, Michael Ogun and Tama Tonga did not deliver the same amount of greatness, as they kind of had your, you know, good middle of the road match from these two guys. Not from the lack of trying. I think, you know, Tonga got to hit a lot of big moves in this and looked really strong. Elgin did his normal thing with, you know, the Falcon Arrow and the Germans and a lot of the big moves. It didn't seem like Kurikan was so hot for him as much as they have in the past. I think it's probably because he's been gone for a while. But that big gun stun that Tonga hits off the top and then wins, go him getting 2 points.
Yeah, this was kind of a shocking victory for me. And my day two picks were just, you know, absolutely destroyed, by the way. I had Elgin winning this one, and much to my surprise, Tonga pulls this out, which I really enjoyed. And I like this match, too. It's good. It doesn't have that same storytelling element I think Kojima and Robertson have. And on that same vein that you were talking about, one, Elgin hasn't been here, but Tonga continually has to try to prove himself, I think, to audiences all the time when he's in singles. And they don't seem to care for him either way, unfortunately. But he's a great worker. And I think there's nothing wrong with the work rate in this match. It's just, it's two guys who are very, you know, up as far as people being invested in them right now. Mm-hmm. And
you feel that because Kurgan's usually really loud.
Right. Especially like night and day between the previous match and this one too. And you know, they hats off to them because they put on a really good match. And I don't want to understate that enough, but you know, there are times where it just feels like they're kind of doing moves a little bit here or there.
Right. Yeah.
And that kind of takes away too.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt like most of it until they got to the end and they were starting to really go for it, you know, especially Tonga, who seemed like he wanted to win a lot more. Obviously, has bigger, a lot more to prove than Elgin here. Just, yeah, there was parts where I was just kind of like, all right, they're doing it. This is happening, but I'm not really invested. And I think that's a big key with the G1 is, in order to, with all these matches happening one after the other, you really have to get invested in what's going on, or like I said earlier, it's going to feel like a blur.
Yeah. You know, to that vein too, there are some people in this tournament who are slow starters, not only winning points, but I think as far as getting fans to start buying into them, and this is two guys. And we saw it last year too. I don't think Elgin might have been hotter at the time, but certainly crowds got more invested in him as the tournament went on. And right. he slow started last year. It looks like he's going to do that again this year. And Tonga was starting to win people over by the end, too. So I think you give him some time in these matches, with these two at least, will be much more improved. And for Elgin, it's probably going to happen sooner or later, because tonight he's going to face Kazuchika. He's going to face Okada for the first time, which is just incredible. So,
yeah, that's going to be awesome stuff for these guys, certainly. Then you get to the two LIJ members, Sonata and Evil. They had given you in the previous show a little tag match to kind of preview LIJ going against each other. They handshake to let you know that there are no ill feelings here. But give me a second as the kid is yelling about something. Well, see, that's what happens when you do shows at 8 o'clock at night instead of doing them at like midnight or 1 a.m. when kids are awake still. But we go on with this this terrific match between Sonata and Evil here. As Evil is quick to bring in the chair, and you know, he pretty much he comes in to do the baseball swing thing, but not before they knock out Red Shoes with the chair, because you know. They have to keep it kayfabe that that Red Shoes can't see what's going on, even though it doesn't matter because he's not going to get DQ'd for hitting him with a chair anyway. Like, I don't like, might as well just do it right in front of him because you're not DQ'ing him for hitting you with the chair either. Don't they like not get? They only get like a point for a DQ win or something.
No, wins are wins, and. I a lot of people have trouble with referee stuff in Puro, and for that, it's the more sport mentality of it's completely in the referee's hands. So if he's willing to let it go, he's willing to let it go. It's why they start in stout countouts all the time, too.
Right.
Not only because, you know, if they're doing stuff on the outside or whatever, and they want to keep the match going because they're supposed to, but it adds into the feeling that the referee is much more in control of the match than rules usually allow, at least in the West.
Yeah, I saw a lot of people. I was listening to, John Pollock. He does the daily New Japan thing, and he went off on the fact that they did not disqualify either guy here for attacking the ref. But we'll see that more later. So if you don't like the ref getting attacked, wait, it's going to happen more. So, you know, these two, it takes a little while for it to get going, but after a while, it does, you know, especially once Evil puts in his new hold, the Banshee Muzzle. I don't know where he came up with that name, but it's actually pretty awesome. I think I would have ever thought of calling something a Banshee Muzzle, but it works with his character. And, you know, I did love that, man. You know, Don Callis said, I didn't hear this, but apparently Don Callis says that he's seen Sonata jumping from the ground to a car. I can believe that after this match. The height this dude gets on leapfrogs is insane. Not to mention just how easy he, like, goes in and out of the ring, jumping around like it's no big deal. Like, hello, this isn't something that anybody can do. Sonata just makes it look like it's a breeze. It's amazing, honestly. Just Sonata winds up winning after Evil gets out of the Skull's End by barely touching his toe to the rope, and then he has to hit the moonsault to get the win. So old-style Sonata there for that one. I don't know if it hit the heights of a Juice and Kojima, but it was slightly under that.
Yeah, I would say it was close, and especially the finishing stretch. But before we get all of that, poor Red Shoes. I mean, he has himself a night on this one for sure. And I love Sonata's new mask that he's walking on. It's a big throwback to a lot of the stuff you see the great Muto, who of course trained him, and all that. And you see it. You're seeing it a lot more now in the G1 and Sonata singles matches, just how much of Muto is really sort of in Sonata. And I really love these callbacks because if you're new to New Japan, obviously, I don't know if you're going to catch all this, but if you've been around for a while, if you go in and learn some history and all that and talk, you know, watch old Muto matches and all that, like you'll see all of that here in Sonata just at a quicker pace. And it's so, so cool to see that. And I'm kind of bummed that they haven't really talked a bunch about that on the English commentary, because it seems like a story thread you would want to pick up on. But at the beginning, this really feels like both guys are just going out there and they want to get all their usual stuff out of the way quicker so they can get to the storytelling part later on in the match. And that has its drawbacks, of course, but this is a really, really good match. Sonata winning made me very happy. As much as I love Evil, I really want to see Sonata succeed in this year's G1. And it looks like that is the plan so far. You know, it could just be early start stuff, but it really looks like they're getting invested in what they want to do with this guy.
Yeah, I think his next match is going to determine a lot about what we see from him in this tournament. You know, having Suzuki, and if you're a guy that picks up a win, not to mention then you get he could possibly a never title match for him down the line, which would be really awesome as well. So, you know, hopefully for him, you get the win. I mean, it's hard because, you know, Suzuki, what happens on this show for him. So it'd be hard to see him go down twice in a row, but it's possible because, you know, Omega's probably not going to challenge him or anything, but Sonata certainly could. So, you know, I agree with him. I'm happy that Sonata won. He gets the 2 points. Evil, in a hard-fought effort, losing nothing here, does get the 0. All right, so we move on to Kazuchika Okada and Toru Yano. Chaos stablemates here. And we saw in the tag match that Okada really didn't want nothing to do with Yano's antics, and he kind of does that here again where he sort of almost leaves at one point, but they kind of let him, you know, Jado lets him know you can't really do that, as you have Jado in Yano's corner and Ghetto in Okada's corner. They come into play various times here, which to laughs, but I think some of this stuff works, like the Yano doing his unbuckling the buckle and then Okada tying it back up. Because why not? The cool thing here is that the crowd just absolutely does not like Okada ruining the Yano spots. they want to see Yano being Yano, and they are not happy about it. They boo him rather loudly every time he interrupts Yano doing the YTR thing and all that stuff. And just I thought that worked as far as, like, they really got the crowd behind him. He got some, like, 2 or 3 really good near falls with those roll-ups towards the end. But Okada wins with red ink, which we never see him win with. Don't know if that means anything, because, you know, they kind of downplayed Evil. Even though he went through the whole deal of naming his new submission and everything, and they had Sonata just get out of it like it was no big deal. And then here Okada wins with his submission that, like, he never wins with. So I don't know if that means anything or not.
Yeah, I don't know either. I think Okada kind of being a dick might mean something, though, because we see this carry over into the next night that we're going to talk about. But, you know, Okada does tend to – he can kind of cut that way sometimes. And that's kind of what makes him an interesting guy to watch every time he comes out through that curtain. This was insanely long. I can't remember the last time Toru Yano wrestled 10 minutes. And that was a little mind-blowing. And for a second there, after they're doing all the opening stuff and they get through messing around and everything, I thought, wow, they might actually let Yano show that he can wrestle. He's actually pretty good. And they just sort of stick to the jokes, which is fine, but that's not what you're watching G1 for, right? I mean, if you want to do Toru Yano stuff, you want it 5 minutes, 6 minutes. Stay in the sweet spot, you know, of what you know Yano can do. And they didn't really go for that here. And maybe they just wanted to make sure that you got lots of Okada time. But I don't know. I could have done without at least 6 or 7 minutes of this match, honestly.
Yeah, because it's really meant to be sort of like a palate cleanser. mm-hmm. before you get into, which in this case, I was surprised they didn't do the match earlier, just to kind of do it, like have a couple of matches before this, but this kind of also works to do it before your main event as well. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I think it could have been a little shorter. I was okay with some of it just because you did have more laughs and they did sort of give Yano a lot here. And it felt more like, okay, well, if you're going to be a dick to me, I'm going to be a dick to you as well on Yano's end. And they just could have done this, you know, in like, say, 7 minutes instead of 10. And it, mm-hmm. it might have helped. But Okada gets the 2 points I think everybody knew he was going to get. And, right. you know, we move along here to his two, you know, big rivals that he's had this year in Kenny Omega and Minoru Suzuki facing off. And Omega, I really did look like, I like that Omega looked like he was scared mm-hmm. of Suzuki here, you know, because he should be. This dude kills people. And, he you know, he doesn't mess around at all about this. So, you know, Omega tries to go for a Rana, and then Suzuki just kicks him in the face so that he doesn't try to do a dive. I mean, like, Suzuki just does not care at all.
He's not here to play games.
Right. He's not here to, like, let you just, hey, let's dive and fall into. No, I'm not doing that. This is what's happening. You're, I'm going to whoop you. You know, they try to go at a chop battle. You know, Omega tries to go with, like, a chop battle. Suzuki just, like, smiles at him, like, really? All right. We'll do this then. You know? Suzuki puts, poor Red Shoes, my God. He takes a V-trigger from Omega.
Oh, my God.
Lord, that man. I feel so bad for him.
Maybe Red Shoes has been watching his son wrestle too much. He's like, hey, I could do that. And then Kenny Omega had to put him in his place.
And then, of course, you can't have a Suzuki gun, you know, leader match without Suzuki gun involvement. Taka, Taichi, and Desperado all show up, and they beat down Kenny Omega. Chase Owens appears, but, you know, he's disposed. And then Fale shows up, and there's a chair. You know, Taka has a chair, and Fale is like, really? Like, you're going to try to hit me in the chest with that thing? And he just knocks everybody out, and then he takes, I think it's Taichi and Taka, like, you know, both one under each arm, and just takes them to the back. It was, you know, as much as I don't like the run-ins and everything, that was kind of funny. I did enjoy that spot with Fall Light, but then after that, it got really good with them just kind of countering the big stuff, and Omega gets a big dive after all that going on. He does wind up hitting a bunch of V-triggers and the one-wing angel to beat Suzuki. It seems like very divisive, right? Like, you know, Larry didn't like this. Some people didn't like it. They thought the run-ins totally ruined it. And there's people that still thought this was a great match. Where do you fall on the scale?
Larry gave this 2.5. I've seen some other people giving this north of 3. I think I'm right about at that 3-star point. You know, the interference spot is expected, and especially when you have the leaders of two stables who made their names off of interference, you had to expect it. I thought it was overdone, personally, but I'm kind of glad it was at least all clumped together. So you got this really great beginning, though, where they're telling the story of Kenny is afraid of Minoru, and he should be because Suzuki starts attacking his knee and really zeroing in on it, and then you get all the interference, and then you sort of get back to the story of, okay, now we're in this big brawl trying to put the other away, and it's ultimately fine. One, I was surprised that Kenny won here. I thought he was going to lose to Suzuki for sure, and that, of course, does not happen. And admittedly, this could be setting up for a long time because we're seeing injuries already starting to crop up into this. You know, Naito's neck, Omega's knee, Tanahashi's arm, of course, is probably the big one that everybody's following.
Ibushi's neck, too.
Ibushi's neck too, yeah, which we'll talk about here in this next night too. But man, this was fine, right? I don't think this was so bad as to say it's just above average. This is good. It's just if you're over Suzuki Gun shenanigans, and Larry, I know for sure is, and I kind of am to a point. I could see this very much downplaying your enjoyment of what these two guys tried to do, despite some hurdles that may or may not have been imposed on them.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't. I get it from, like, what you're saying, the perspective of, you know, two guys that they're in stables, that this is kind of what they do. But it's just like in the G1, just you don't need to do this. It's an understood that you don't need to. I understand they did it for, you know, Desperado and Kanemaru and all of them basically in the Super Juniors. But it's like, this is your second biggest whole event of the year, and you're having these. I get that not every match needs to be epic and all this stuff, but it's just, I don't know how Ghetto can say this doesn't take away from what you're trying to see, and I don't know. There's always some methodical thought to what he's doing. Maybe he wants to have this match down the line in a in another setting or whatever, and try to make it a bigger deal than just a G1 match here. But it's a sour note to end the show on.
Yeah, it's a real bummer. Especially because you know Omega and Suzuki really probably could have been this north of 4-star classic that we're going on and on about for a while, and they didn't decide to do that. And I think you're onto something there too. That's what I was thinking when I finished this the next day, was that, you know, maybe Omega and Suzuki is going to be something down the road that they're going to want to do, because we've already seen them sort of have some interactions, not only during this but after Omega won the U.S. title. He was sort of downplaying the importance of the NEVER Openweight Championship now that he's the U.S. champion, and trying to elevate it to that same level as the IC and the heavyweight title, which he doesn't see the NEVER Openweight title at, and obviously nobody does. But, you know, that's a good story element to do when you're a new champion. So I feel like this probably isn't the last of this for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see them kind of go more off that at a later date, if that becomes a thing. You know, maybe Omega does try to challenge Suzuki just to prove that, well, I'm going to hold both titles or something, and show how meanless this is, or whatever. You know, I don't know if they would go that route, but I'd just like to see them have a match that we know they can have. And yeah, Okada had the great match against Suzuki, but I feel like Omega can do the same thing here. Especially if he winds up doing a face turn at some point, because the crowd was heavy into him here. They were chanting his name and all that stuff. They were booing the Suzuki Gun stuff and all that. So, you know, it's there. And of course, when he cuts the promo at the end, that also helps a lot as well, because he later talks Japanese and they get all excited about it. So, you know, I like that. It's interesting though, just seeing him talking this way, right? Like, just going from the mega heel character to now he's sort of like, oh, welcome to the G1. I am Kenny Omega, and I got the due points. And now, you know, it's just like, man, such a difference.
Right, and I think it's just because Suzuki Gun is just that hated, right? I think, especially Kurikan, but like a lot of live audiences, they love Minoru, and everybody else is just sort of secondary, and they just kind of loathe that they have to be there. But I think Zack Sabre is sort of changing that impression somewhat.
Yeah, just because of the way he does things differently here. So,
right.
And we'll get into that with Night 3, because he does this again. But what did you think of sort of Night 2 overall? Not as strong a showing as Night 1.
Right. And I would definitely agree with you on that. The tags are enjoyable the whole way through. Like I said, the opener I really enjoyed a lot, as I did the six-man. The other two are just, you know, they're tags. I think really outside of Kojima and Robinson and Sonata and Evil, you're not missing a whole ton And that pains me to say because two of my favorites in New Japan are in a match together and they just couldn't really put it on. But, you know, it's you're going to have nights like this, especially whenever we get to the middle where they're doing some of these smaller shows. But it's not awful, right? I mean, I would still say mm-hmm. probably somewhere in that 7-8 neighborhood, you know. It's just nowhere near what Night 1 accomplished, which was just incredible.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the point of Night 1, though. They want to knock your socks off so you keep watching.
Right.
So you keep hoping that you get those on both nights, and sometimes you are going to have a letdown on one of the nights or whatever. And that, no matter how even they try to make these, there's always that one block that outperforms the other wrestling-wise most of the time. And it feels like after the first three nights now that A Block is going to be doing that, even though they're the ones with the older gentlemen, you know, mm-hmm. and most of those guys, they only have one guy that's under 35, and that's CSJ. So, you know, it's amazing that I guess you don't. They just found the fountain of youth over there.
I think A-Block a lot. I think a lot of them have, and it's, you know, a lot of the already super established stars are in Block A. I don't think you could say that for Block B.
Right. Like you have, like you talked about, you have the separation between the three sort of mega guys and then everybody else.
Exactly. Exactly.
So we go on to night three. This is the second set of three shows in Currican Hall, which they'll do. Night four will be in Currican, and then night five on Sunday will round out the weekend, and they take a break on Monday. So they started off, of course, this is Block A again, mm-hmm. by the way. And they started off with Yuji Nagata on his last G1 take on Hirooki Goto, and man, they kicked this off with a fantastic match here with these guys. Oh, Lord. And the crowd was really behind Nagata, too. You know, mm-hmm. Goto's kind of weird because the crowd has this, like, tempered expectations with him a lot of times
mm-hmm.
because of that whole character that he has. So it's always kind of like, all right, it's Goto. We got to wait until we know that it might come a point where he's going to win, then we're going to get behind him, you know. But mm-hmm. so this was just fantastic. You had Goto trying to smack around Nagata, and he was having none of that.
No.
And
no.
And he just said, no, hell you. We're going to kick the crap out of you first. And we just get more slaps and strikes and everything. And Goto eventually hits that Arushigiroshi. Nagata hits he blocks the GTR. And then he's able to get that. He hits the backdrop driver.
Mm-hmm.
But Goto kicks out and the crowd really bit it. And it got me too. I thought, oh, wow, damn. I thought Goto might lose there, but he did not. And he's able to come back, and Nagata got the armbar in. Goto got out of it. And he eventually does get the sleeper, but then Nagata still gets out of that, and he hits that GTR, which always looks nasty, and Nagata goes down. But, man, he gave it a fight for 15 minutes.
Boy, did he ever. And before I jump into this, I want to talk real quickly about the tags. If you're out there listening, you haven't watched this, go watch Kenny Omega and Yujiro Takahashi and Tama Tonga Chase Owens. It's one of the funniest matches I've seen all year. It's so funny. and without wanting to spend too much time on it, Omega has a knee injury that they're selling. And everybody's sort of like, okay, we're just going to have like a nice little light workout. And then Tama Tonga goes full kilt on Kenny. And it's so funny. It's great. Also, Kurikan hates Tai Chi too, which if you want to see some of that hate, that's a fun match between Suzuki-gun and LIJ. Nagata and Goto, though. I don't know where people are getting the idea that you just want to slap Nagata around. Because this is clearly going to end very poorly for you. Yoshihashi learned that, and now Goto has too. And especially because he spends maybe the first 4 or 5 minutes just beating the tar out of him, really controlling the match, and then he starts slapping him, and Blue Justice arises and just kicks the living shit out of Goto for at least 2 minutes with some of the stiffest kicks I've seen Nagata throw in a long time. And even whenever it comes down to the stretch and they're striking each other, Nagatas are stronger. And really, I think Goto continues to dominate a good portion of this down the stretch too, but Nagata has you thinking he's going to win this all the way up to the end before that headbutt and GTR. So hats off to them. And this is a match of the year candidate for sure. It's just on that lower end, but this is phenomenal.
Yeah, this was fantastic. And if you weren't awake, or maybe you went to, you were snoozing a little bit by the end of the tags,
mm-hmm.
you woke up here. I should mention that there's no intermission either. So,
right.
You know, those people that hate the intermission, you got your wish. For the G1 shows, I think certainly this one woke you up because there was action going on, and you know, you would have thought that Goto would talk to Yoshihashi about his match. Be like, okay, I'm going to face Nagata next. What did you learn? All right, so I know not to slap him around or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, apparently they did not talk to each other because he does the same thing. Maybe it's a pride thing. Like, maybe Goto just wants to fight Nagata at his peak mm-hmm. best. Like, he wants to get the best out of him or something, because it's just, and it's now two in a row where you see guys going, hello.
I think
Nagata.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think that's the story, right? Because Yoshihashi really dominated the opening parts of his match with Nagata too. And it's like, this isn't Nagata. Just slap him around a little bit, wake that guy up, and then he comes out full tilt and murders you for about 8 minutes, and then you wish you didn't do that.
Yeah, it's like that sleeping bear that's just hibernating,
mm-hmm.
and then, oh, he is here, and now I can't get him to go away. It's bad.
There's a bit that Gabriel Iglesias does about the crocodile hunter and how insane he found him, because he would go up to these wildly dangerous animals, and in his words, he would say, "I'm gonna go poke it with a stick." I feel like that's what they're doing here with Nagata too, mm-hmm. just prodding the dangerous animal until it awakens, and suddenly your arm is three ways from Sunday bent, and you wish it wasn't.
Well, luckily for both the Yoshihashi and Goto, they pick up wins. Goto now with 4 points, leading everything as we go into this. And then we get two familiar foes, Togi Makabe and Tomohiro Ishii. You know what these guys are going to do. They're going to whoop each other until they cannot anymore, because they had a long history of beating each other down for the Neville title for a while. And this continues here. Makabe seems like he's really enjoyed that time of sort of working light, because he's much more motivated here.
Mm-hmm.
And so he takes it to Ishii. Ishii gets it back at him, and they just battle back and forth until Ishii finally takes over with a bunch of headbutts and clotheslines, and he gets that brainbuster and wins.
Yeah, I mean, if you've seen these matches before that Sean was talking about in their war over the Never Openweight title, which, frankly, that's what it was, you get, I think, a nice condensed version of that here in the nice 15, 16 minutes they get, as Ishii and Makabe really, they trade power slams, they trade punches, they trade chops, they trade lariats, they trade slams. They basically, without going full tilt, try to murder each other until basically one of them just really says, you know what, I've had enough and I want to be able to walk the next day. And Makabe in this case is the one that does so. And I was really thinking that Makabe was going to pull this out, because he's one of those that's really hard to try to figure out what they're going to do with him during a G1 tournament. And they usually like him in that 8 to 10 point range too.
Right.
And this could have been one of those that went either way, but Ishii manages to pull out the brainbuster after a nice headbutt. And this was really good. This kept the pace going that Goto and Nagata established in the previous match, and I was really appreciative of that.
Yeah, they sure did. All we needed was Ishii trying to do a tope con hilo to the outside.
Oh my god.
would have been gotten everything here. But this was really good. It felt like at times they were kind of just doing the things that they normally do, right? Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say going through the paces, but the things you would expect. And Ishii wins, which is good, because like you said, it's very hard, because sometimes they'll have him just kind of trade back and forth, getting wins in it. I wonder if they're doing the whole, all right, the veterans are going to take a little bit of a back seat here, the mm-hmm. older guys. And, you know, so far, Nagata and Makabe, the only guys with no points. So
right.
And then we get this doozy in the middle of everything with Kota Ibushi and Sabre. And, you know, this played up to the strengths of both guys, right? Mm-hmm. Sabre is a submission specialist. He can strike too, but he's much more about trying to grapple with you and whatever. And Ibushi is all about flying around and wanting to hit you hard. And Sabre takes away the ability for Ibushi to fly around, do those big moves that we see him do in most matches. And Ibushi has to adapt. And so Ibushi then has to start sort of like, it's almost like we're watching an MMA match happen
yes.
in front of us here with Ibushi like just trying to find that opening to strike while trying to avoid Sabre grabbing him and whatever. And then when Sabre does grab him, he grabs him by the neck even at one point with his legs, which look nasty.
Ugh.
Like, imagine somebody putting their legs like diagonal around your neck like a scissor. It looks so, and then just the angle that Ibushi was at, I was like, oh my god, what the hell am I watching here? How is he still breathing? I don't know.
I honest to god don't think I could tell you. I was trying to think of something witty and I was too flabbergasted.
I mean, like, just Sabre, obviously, you know, he gets in various submissions and everything, and as it goes on, it gets even more intense, because, like, Ibushi tries to do a Pele, but he catches him, and then does a, like, STF, which is amazing, and, you know, Ibushi is able to sort of block a PK, and then he gets a knee strike in, and Ibushi has to win by physically powering Sabre down with the last ride, which I think is a testament to the whole match. Like, he's been trying to avoid Sabre. He's having to deal with Sabre submissions. And finally, he's just like, dude, you are going down. Bam! And you're not getting up. And, yeah, it took every little last bit of everything Ibushi had to get the win.
Mm-hmm. This is an incredible one. It's well placed in the car too, because we just gotten two wars and these guys kind of slow it down a little bit, which is weird to say in a match with Kota Ibushi, but he doesn't fly in this. Mm-hmm. Very rarely does he. And when he does, Zack Sabre catches him, which is just an incredible storytelling element in this too. And Ibushi really focuses on strikes during this, which I thought was really cool, because that first one he hits on Sabre, where he just absolutely rocks him with that like lightning quick right hand. Oh my god, that's really, I think, when this got going. And Sabre, I mean, catching Ibushi pretty much in every different way you could, tying him up, putting on some, you know, cranking whatever he had in his hands, and just making Ibushi kind of wish he didn't get out of bed this morning. Eventually, you know, it's not like he gets outworked or anything. Ibushi just overpowers him into this beautiful powerbomb, and I want to see this again, and maybe a third time, and possibly forever.
Yep. I wonder if someone saw this and goes, why didn't we do this at the Cruiserweight Classic again?
But, there's Kevin Kelly on commentary, too, mentions that people had tried to book this match 5 times before. This is the first time they've ever wrestled one-on-one. And injuries or travel schedules or whatever else just kept it from not being able to happen until the G1. So kind of a magical little insight there.
Yeah, special moment for the G1, and they certainly delivered, gave you everything you wanted, and hopefully we get to see this again, like you're saying, from these guys. Ibushi gets the important 2 points after Saber had upset Tanahashi and Ibushi had lost to Naito, so we're evens for these guys. And we go on to, again, familiar foes, Hiroshi Tanahashi and Bad Luck Fale. It seems like they always battle in the G1. And though this wasn't one of those standout ones with Fale, I think it served a purpose of just Tanahashi tried to avoid being hurt by Fale here at first. He's trying to get away from him, and he has to counter a lot of stuff to avoid being severely damaged at this point. But I don't know why you're trying to skin the cat if your arm hurts. But, you know, Tanahashi, he can't stop himself from, you know, showing off a little bit. It's just in his nature. That's the Shawn Michaels there. It doesn't matter if I'm hurt. I'm going to do this because it's what I do. I love the count-out finish, though, because they do so many count-out things on these shows. Like, almost every match has a, oh, he almost got to, like, 18 or 19 or whatever. And Fale doesn't lose. So, you know, Tanahashi gets... It has a hurt arm, and Fale doesn't look bad for not beating him. And then this now makes it to where when you do a count-out finish going forward, it might mean a little bit more. The crowd might buy it because you have had somebody lose by count-out.
Right. Also plays up the fact that Tanahashi is hurting, no matter really what's happening. He legitimately has a hole in his bicep that is trying to heal over, and he keeps doing stupid stuff like trying to skin the cat and everything else. And, you know, he finally works Bad Luck Fale into a position on the outside where he hits the high fly flow and then a sling blade on the apron, which just looked positively brutal.
That was nasty.
Oh, and, you know, I don't blame Fale for not being able to beat the count. And it makes, not only does it keep Fale looking really strong because he really gave Tanahashi all he wanted and more up to the end, but, you know, Tanahashi didn't necessarily win as clean as he has in the past, and that really... That keeps the story going for Tanahashi. I think this is just such a really smart way to go about doing this match.
Yeah, it goes back to that credence of Fale's a big guy. He hit that ring apron really, really hard.
He bounced at least a foot in the air. Like it was.
It was going to be very difficult for him to get up after that, and they sold that very well. So, you know. Props to both men here. This wasn't, like I said, this wasn't one of their better matches.
Right.
It's still a good match and served that purpose of getting the count out finish and telling the story with Tanahashi again. So then we get the main event of Yoshihashi and Tetsuya Naito. You know, Yoshihashi getting the main event of the show. That's awesome for him. And for a while, it looked like, you know, Naito was just going to take care of him here, but you know, he's really going after Yoshihashi's neck, and then Yoshihashi finally starts to get in there and start doing most of his, you know, offense that we see him do in most matches. You know, the blockbuster, the like where he drapes you over the ropes and kicks you, the big neck breaker. All that stuff. And it forces Naito to finally have to get it in gear as well.
Right.
But Yoshihashi just keeps kicking out of stuff. He blocks the Karma with the Destino, so he doesn't get a full Destino there. And it forces Naito to have to do a second Destino because Yoshihashi kicks out of the first one. And Naito wins there. But Naito really helped... make Yoshihashi looked really good here. I didn't think he lost anything, and just again Yoshihashi coming to work. This wasn't great. I think it was a really good sort of ending to the show, but at least ended on a much better note than night two.
I agree entirely. Not only because Naito and Yoshihashi really went out there and worked super hard, which I think you could see across the entire 20-25 minutes this got, but they really played up a story, too, that made the crowd believe that Yoshihashi stood a chance, which you go into this looking at it and you're like, why Yoshihashi's just going to get beat real bad. And this is the main event. Like what's happening here? And Yoshi just won't go away. I think that was the story here. Naito underestimates him at first. And then once he starts going, Hashi still won't go away. He's giving him all he wants and more. I mean, Super Rana, I think from then on really, I think set the tone for what they were going for. And, eventually it just kind of becomes too much as you would expect. And Naito gets the big win and sends the crowd home happy and everything like that. And I thought this was good. One of the better Yoshihashi matches I've seen in my time with New Japan. And he continually makes me feel bad for me thinking that, you know, all he does is lose. And suddenly, hey, there's a great worker underneath all that. They just didn't need him.
Yeah. And like you said, it was about proving that Yoshihashi could win. He got the crowd on his side by the end because both of these guys worked so hard to get that story across, and they finally did. And right when they do is when Naito gets to sort of put him away. But, I mean, if you didn't think that there is love for – I mean, if you're still one of those that feels like Naito doesn't deserve to be in bigger and better – places, you know, such as a main eventing a Tokyo Dome or something. The man's music hits and everybody is chanting his name before he even walks out there at Kurgan Hall. So there seemed to be like women that were a little, they were getting ready to blush at Naito coming out. You know, there's guys chanting. The kids really liked the whole thing. So I mean, this is a whole event where. Look at this a year ago where this starts for him and a year on, and it's amazing where this is now at for Naito.
I think for me, the moment that superstardom clicked for Naito was that Kurgan Hall show the first time around when that kid walks up with the mask and everything and raises his hand up and Naito does the fist bump with him. I think that was the moment where if you're not in those live crowds all the time or if you're not watching every show and you see that, I think that's the moment, you know, this guy is really becoming top three, top four, however many tops you want to say New Japan has right now. One of the guys that not only can draw, but brings it every show, and everybody, men, women, children, are behind this guy.
Yeah, and I want to point out the whole thing with the submission deal again, because, you know, Yoshihashi spent a lot of time last year really getting over that butterfly lock thing. And when he pulls it out in this match, the crowd sort of really buys it because he has it right there in the center of the ring. And Naito has to do everything he can to get out of it.
Right.
So, again, I know this isn't like for if you're just starting to watch now, you're not going to get this. But I really love the sometimes where you get these nice nuggets of things. If you've been watching, you start to realize why these things matter. It's another little thing of. He spends all that time really building this up, and when you pull it off in these big matches, they mean a lot more to those key moments, and that was sort of a key moment in that match where I go, man, wow. Him winning or him doing things with that butterfly lock meant a lot to this match when we got to that point, and it makes that ending matter more.
Right. And maybe that's something they're trying to accomplish throughout this tournament, too, with guys like Evil getting the Banshee Lock and Okada breaking out Red Ink and all that. Like, maybe keeping finishes fresh and all that is really important during the G1, especially when you're literally watching a New Japan show almost every day for about 2 months. And keeping, you know, keeping pinfalls fresh, keeping submissions fresh, keeping all that. You know, where you're always wondering exactly how the finish is going to come is really important during this time. And maybe that's, like you mentioned earlier, maybe that's something they're really trying to go for. And Yoshihashi, for sure, like, he won most of his – I think he won all three of his G1 matches last year with the butterfly lock, if I remember correctly.
Right.
So, you're right. I mean, they really poured in a lot to that.
So, yeah, that's going to do it for night three. So, they, of course, like I mentioned – they're going to do another show on Saturday, the last one from Kurgan Hall, and then they're going to move on for Sunday, and they take a break on Monday. So you'll get Block B on Saturday, and here are the standings right now for both Block A and B before we bid you adieu for this one. Tetsuya Naito and Goto are the only undefeateds in Block A. They both have 4 points. Yoshihashi, Ishii, Kota Ibushi, Zack Sabre Jr., Hiroshi Tanahashi, and Bad Luck Fale all have 2 points. And the two older veterans, Yoji Nagata and Togi Makabe, both are on 0 right now. Anything surprise you, stand out to you there? Or?
My Block B night did not go well for me. so I think Tama winning was surprising for Block B. Are we talking Block A? I'm sorry.
That's fine. I can go through Block B here real quick. Juice Robinson, Tonga, Sonata, Okada, and Omega all have 2 points. Suzuki, Kojima, Elgin, Evil, Yano all have 0. Of course, you'll have more to look at once they have the Saturday show. And
right.
The points are even there with Block A. But yeah, Block B, I think I wound up getting only Yano and Okada and Juice and Kojima, right? So, I got Sonata and Evil, and then I had picked Juice to beat Kojima. So I went 3 out of 5 on Block B.
Yeah, I was 2 out of 5. I got Juice and I got Sonata, and that was it. So there's like Omega winning surprised me, and I think Elgin losing probably surprised me the most out of that night too. But everything else I could have seen happening, right? So. I think Block B is sort of shaping up the way that I think Juice is probably going to perform pretty well. I'm really like Sonata is the one I'm really watching Block B for outside of, you know, Omega and all that. So, for sure. Interesting there. Block A, I don't think it's maybe Goto getting 4 right off the bat. But Goto is another one of those that's always real hard to figure out what they're doing with him. I think everybody else is sort of right about where I thought they were going to be. I think Block A will be competitive until the end where you realize that people are starting to get really large leads.
Yeah, it's let's, you know, start the banner for Goto to be in there till the end again.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, honestly.
Like, this is going to be the time. This is going to be it, Goto fans. He's going to win. Probably not, but they're gonna push that again just because they can. I mean, it's not like he doesn't. He has wonderful performances. It's not like he doesn't go out there and have great matches or whatever. It's just always that wonderful tease that you get with him.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's had 2 of the best matches of the tournament so far. Like, you can't underestimate his work rate. Like, he is so talented. It's just. He doesn't have, I think, that extra bit that New Japan wants for the guy leading the company, and that's been the downfall for him. Is it just worked into a bridesmaid story for him?
Yeah, that happens in all promotions. Some guys that maybe you think, oh man, he's such a great worker. Why doesn't he get more recognition? Well, you know, if the guy that is putting pen to paper on who wins what doesn't really think that by whatever metric they want to use, think that that's the guy, then it's not going to be.
Right.
So, all right. We will be back on Sunday, after we do the Battleground review, which they can only go up from the bottom level that I have that at right now.
Yep.
so, you know, hopefully we're talking about, you know, 3 nights of good wrestling and not just 2 shows that we watch ahead, good wrestling, and then the other one that we kind of just survive through. But yeah, we'll be back on Sunday with nights 4 and 5, so we'll take a break for Saturday, and then they take a break Monday, so of course we will not take a break Monday because we have Raw and the regular episode on Monday, and then they resume things on Tuesday, so we'll be back then after that. But all right, everybody, hopefully you enjoyed what you heard here. If you did, make sure you hit that like button or the subscribe button so you can, every time we do a show, whether it's G1 or not related, you can get it immediately into your feed. And we are everywhere. We are on Google Play, iTunes, YouTube. We're part of 411mania.com. We get posted there on WTMNet.com, which is our website. and everywhere else that there are podcasts, we are there. And if there's a podcast thing that we're not on, you know, you can always let us know, and I'll quickly try to get us there. We are not on SoundCloud, by the way, because, paying $15 a month for something is rather expensive when it looks like they're having money issues themselves. So, you know, it is what it is. But thank you for listening, and we will be back again with more G1 on Sunday. Until then, we'll see you later, everybody.
Have a good one, guys.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.